You're listening to The Capital Table. Private capital markets have been evolving for many years, but never more so than in recent times. Take a seat at the Capital Table with leading experts discussing insights into the private equity and M&A worlds, and take away the knowledge you need to excel in a rapidly changing marketplace. We know this is one table you'll leave feeling full and satisfied.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the Capital Table. This is Steve Brady, partner and market leader of Transaction Advisory at Withum. Excited to have my colleagues Bill Morrison and Chrissy Giorgio join me today to talk about the important topic of investigative due diligence. So let's dive into that topic. But first, Bill and then Chrissy, a brief introduction and welcome to the audience.
Thank you, Steve. My name is Bill Morrison. I've been a partner at Withum since I merged my firm Morrison & Company with Withum in December of 2010. And my background is that I began as an FBI agent doing accounting investigations, and before that, investigating foreign counterintelligence.
Thank you, Bill. My name is Chrissy Giorgio. I was part of Bill's firm. I joined him in 2006, and then we merged into Withum in 2010. And as he mentioned, I headed up the research, both industry and investigative public record. And eventually, all of my years of experience doing such was able to get me qualified to be a licensed private detective with the state of New Jersey. So I have that designation as well. We've just been trying to grow the practice. We've been having a lot of success with it within the firm. And we've just been trying to point out the relevance and the importance of people knowing about doing their due diligence on anybody they're going to get involved with.
Great. Well, again, welcome, Bill and Chrissy, and certainly looking forward to the discussion. And as our audience can tell, great wealth of background from both of them as we talk about this. So let's start at the top. What is investigative due diligence, and why is it important for our audience to consider this as they're looking at deals?
As I said, my primary work is much closer to what the transaction advisory group at Withum does in quality of earnings and investigating the books and records of a company. I've always thought of the investigative process kind of starting where we leave off. We investigate what's on the paper. We can trace paper. We can trace transactions from one company to another. We can detect fraud on the books of a company, et cetera. Where Chrissy and the investigations group really begins is once you get off the books. And it's learning, what we don't know, what we can't tell from the paper.
Yeah. So due diligence is actually a detailed examination of an individual or a company. And it's usually performed before you enter any kind of business arrangement with that person. So it's, as Bill said, it's the equivalent of essentially what you don't know, finding that out. So doing your homework before you become involved with somebody. Kind of like how you would, before you bought something online, you may read up some reviews to see what the product is like. Same idea. Before you get involved with someone, you want to just kind of get an idea of their reputation. Are they a good character to be involved with? Do they maybe have a little bit of a questionable background that may cause some problems for you or your business down the road? That kind of thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so, Chrissy, Bill, if you're a seller and you're looking at selling your business, what are some of the things you should know?
Let me give the general overview, and Chrissy will tell you what you have to know. If you're a seller and you're selling the business cash on the barrelhead, you want $1 million for the business, and someone's going to come to a closing and write you a certified check for $1 million. You don't really need to know much unless you care about legacy and who you're selling to, et cetera. I think where you, for your own purposes, where you really need to know as a seller, if you're going to be taking back paper of any sort, and if there's going to be payments over time, you need to know who these people are that you're going to be doing business with. And I'll just start with one story I relayed to Chrissy this morning. After I left the FBI and then worked at Bloomingdale's department store as an internal auditor for a couple of years and then for a CPA firm, I began my own practice. And ultimately, I only handled forensic litigation matters. But at the start, I had regular clients. And an individual had left the prosecutor's office in Bergen County, where I practice. And his wife had a younger brother. And the younger brother and a friend, who are very young, were going to buy a restaurant. Well, they bought the restaurant, and I became their accountant. The woman who sold them the restaurant remained as the owner, and they had a management contract. Well, it wasn't long before I'm doing the books, and they're not paying their payroll taxes. They're not paying purveyors. They're just taking the money out. They were having a party. I got very upset, of course, and mentioned this to the individual who had referred the client to me. We then advised the woman who had sold the business. Needless to say, I was fired. The woman took the business back over, and it was an utter disaster. She owed all kinds of money. So that's what can happen if you don't, obviously, you don't cover off your bases legally, and if you don't do due diligence on an individual.
Great story. And yeah, Chrissy, let's dive into some of those points as a seller you should consider.
Absolutely. And this is especially important, too, when you're entering into any kind of agreement that may involve a financial aspect, too, like a merger and acquisition or a sale of a large asset, an investment into a company. So as a seller, it's important for you to know a few things. I would think the reputation of the buyer is primarily what you'd want to know. Are they who they purport to be? The credit history. Can they make their payments? We can look up and see if they've got judgments and liens against them. Have they filed bankruptcy a few times? This would kind of give you an idea of any trends. Do they have issues with paying their payments on time? Have they had any outstanding liens? Do they have any substance or domestic violence issues? Sometimes when you're doing a criminal record search, you start looking into different dockets and finding more information, and that may actually list out something that maybe they've been involved in a domestic spat, or they've had some sort of arrest for a substance issue when they were much younger. But it's still good to know if they've got these kind of issues going on. And also a lot of times too, verification of their resume. Is it accurate? Are the degrees genuine? Have they actually graduated from where they said they would? Because we've seen a few issues where people have lied on their resumes and said they've gotten a degree from somewhere and they actually haven't. Maybe they took a few courses here and there, but they never actually walked at the end or never actually got the degree. Yeah, definitely an interesting concept to things that people may not think about on the daily, but your reputation does say a lot about the type of person you are and who you're going into business with.
Yeah, we checked out some articles online, and it was one about 17 successful executives, including the director of admissions at MIT, David Geffen, the very famous music manager, and many other former head of Yahoo. And other executives who falsified their resumes. So this is a very common thing. Also, Chrissy, there's many databases, and we can get into those that you're going to check out. But reputation is something that may not be in a database or on civil or criminal records. And you've explained to me how you go about checking out someone's reputation, both on social media and in the media. And how do you do that?
Right. Yes, exactly. We can do media searches, which a lot of the times, what's important for us is more so the negative media, right? So have they had issues in the past? And again, social media, what people tend to put on their Facebook or Instagram, they'll tell you everything that way. And a lot of people tend to do that quite frequently. So we're able to sort of tell what kind of lifestyle they're living. Are they who they say they are? Are they living a lavish lifestyle and they're portraying something different? That kind of thing.
Yeah, interesting. And so in addition to these important points, if you're buying a company, what are some of the additional things you should know and take a look at when you're on the buy side, as we've obviously done together on buy-side diligence projects?
Right. On the buy side, it's definitely important to know if the company that you're getting involved with is in compliance with all laws and regulations. This is where it's important to actually have a good concept and understanding of the industry that the company you're going into business with operates in. Are there regulations there? Various rules that may exist. That's a pretty main issue there. And knowing the outlook of the industry you're going to be getting into as well. What may you be facing going forward that could trip you up with success or actually help you with success? Again, we go back to reputation. What's the reputation of the company and the owner? And do they have any civil or criminal proceedings that may be looming or they may have had in the past and maybe they've gotten into quite a few litigation incidents where they've had to pay out? And that kind of all plays again into the reputation. And do you really want to get into business with something like that?
I have a couple of points I'd add. I like to tell a story. It was a drugstore in the town I live in. And the owner sold the drugstore. It's a little mom and pop drugstore. Well, not 3 months later, a CVS started going up within 100 yards of that drugstore. And needless to say, it hasn't done all that well. And, you know, had somebody done a record search of the town, checked out the media, as Chrissy could do, they would have seen that that was about to happen. In investigating fraud, which is a big part of our forensic department, one of the things an auditor needs to do in auditing is understand the nature, the industry that they're going into, so they can properly detect fraud. It's one of the key things for understanding fraud. But you know, there's lots of examples today. Obviously, if you're going to buy a car dealership, you want to investigate the company that they're selling for. Let's just say, hypothetically, Chrysler, you're going to buy a Chrysler dealership, but they don't have any electric cars in the offing. You'd want to know that. So all sorts of things that can be important in the business and in how successful the business is going to be in are out there in the market and in the news.
Yeah, very interesting. So as we're making this assessment, you know, what types of information do you look at and, you know, what do you consider when you're doing this due diligence investigation?
We look into a variety of things. We look into any litigation cases that may have been filed, the judgments, liens, any credit history, any UCC liens, any substance abuse, as I mentioned before, anything that could portray that by way of media outlets. Sometimes there may be a news article. Recently, I found one for somebody I was doing a due diligence search on, who, when he was about 17, got into some trouble with his friends for attempting to hold up a liquor store. So again, that usually your public record footprint does not start for a person until you're 18 years old. But again, news articles kind of told his story a little bit differently. Again, verifying their resume. So professional licenses, we go through, we check professional licenses. We can tell if there's been any disciplinary actions against the person. You know, you don't want to get involved with somebody who's maybe had been accused of fraud or money laundering, that kind of thing. Criminal history, any bankruptcy filings. We can also tell if there are sex offender searches. We can tell notices of default on properties. There's a whole variety of things. Everything's out there. It's just a matter of us as the investigators knowing where to find it and how to do the analysis to tell the story of what's going on in this with this person or this company.
Yeah, so at that point, Chrissy, I mean, how is all that information? That's a lot of sources. And, you know, how do you assess that information and pull the story together?
Right. So the information is actually accessed by way of open source intelligence. And all that is it's just a way to reference information that's publicly available, usually by government records, print media, like we were talking about, social media, various other resources. The benefit to what we do is that all of the databases we use compile everything nicely into one area for us. Because, you know, you could be spending days and days and days searching various states and trying to figure out if they have criminal filings and everything. But those databases we use will tell you nationally. It just compiles. It makes it a little easier. And then we just go through, we analyze, and we piece the puzzle together and tell the story about what's going on. We could tell who they're related to, who they've done business with. We can tell if they are involved with any entities. We've had issues where people will come in saying, oh, I have no involvement with such and such company. And then we go online and we may see that they may be a registered agent of the company, or there may actually be a few companies that stem off from one that, you know, they try to hide stuff from us, and we're able to, the due diligence search helps us to sort of prove if they're telling us the truth or if they are trying to leave out a few things.
Yeah, that's great.
And I have another question for Chrissy. You know, why can't I just Google this myself instead of having you do it?
Well, Google only goes so far. I mean, you can find a lot on Google overall. But as I was saying, the databases that we access are pretty high profile. The government actually uses a lot of them, too. And you're also dealing with super sensitive information a lot of the time as well. So, yes, it is public record, but there is some stuff. Now, that's a good question, Bill, too, because some information, depending on states and how they vary with privacy laws, you may not be able to find some of the data. Again, that also comes into play a lot with international people. We had a client come to us, and he owned a pharmaceutical company, and he was contacted in the United States, and he was contacted by one in India that was just getting their legs on the ground and trying to establish themselves in the United States. And they wanted to get him to invest and help them out. And he was questioning them. He wasn't sure. He on his own couldn't really find very much. He was Googling an address for them, and the address was coming up as a residential versus an actual company address. So when I started doing my searches and I was able to pull up the formation documents for this company here, it showed that, you know, yes, it was a residential address, but that was the address of the people who were the actual owners of the company in India. So what it was is they needed an address to create the formation documents for here. They were trying to get a space that they could rent, almost like a WeWork, a WeShare, and for the pharmaceutical end of things. But when we started looking into using our databases, we were able to verify their financial standing, that what they had said was accurate. They were doing very well, especially during COVID. They were able to help with getting a lot of tests put together and out there for the area that they were specifically in India. So yeah, Google goes so far, but again, you trying to like verify actual information as to who these owners may be, you know, their reputation, the company's reputation, certain things like that. We can sometimes put a person at ease, or on the flip side, maybe make them a little hesitant depending what information we're able to find out.
Yeah, that's great. Well, these are great details and areas for people to consider. So, I mean, Chrissy, Bill, as we wrap up here, let's talk about some real life examples and some of the things that you've run across in doing due diligence on the investigative side.
Absolutely. Well, as I said, the one that we just did with the company from India, that actually worked out well for that client. We've had some other stories, though, where it didn't. Bill and I actually worked on a case several years ago for a doctor who was a plastic surgeon, and he loved what he did. So he didn't really care about the business side of things. So he actually hired a person who was a bookkeeper, did not do a background on her or anything like that. Turned out, long story short, she ended up creating some shell companies. She sort of led him down a bad road. And, you know, the government was actually going to call her, I believe, Bill, right, as a witness, a key witness.
Yes.
And we said, well, there's got to be something that must come up on her if she got him into this much trouble. So I started doing a few checks, looking into things. I called a few courts back where she was from. And we found out that she ended up having all these charges of fraud against her. She had quite a few judgments against her. And it turned out, going back to verifying your education, she wasn't an accountant. She had just gotten, I think, taken a few courses for bookkeeping in college. Bill, refresh me if I'm leaving anything out, but it turned out that our client actually ended up, he had to serve some time in prison because of the actions of her and him not doing his due diligence to figure out who's getting the business with.
No, you're absolutely correct. She'd represented herself as a CPA. She wasn't. She represented that she had knowledge that she didn't have, and she was a total fraud. And he ended up in jail over this.
Yeah, I mean, fascinating how you can find things that on the surface don't appear as they are. And certainly it's, you know, part of the whole due diligence process. And again, I really appreciate the two of you joining us as we talk about this one aspect of due diligence and as we work with our audience as they're looking at either buying or selling a company or other transactions. Thanks for helping us cover how important this aspect is an investigation. So Bill and Chrissy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you,
Steve. Pleasure.
And to our audience, we will see you, talk to you on the next edition of the Capital Table. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Capital Table. For more information, please visit witham.com. Thank you for listening.